it's pretty bad. Pretty bad.
We're open to public hearing on House Bill and public hearing work session on House Bill 5012. We're going to set aside the budget note on the ergonomics. We're still working out some issues on that. So we're going to go through and conceptually look at the, we're going to look at the budget and then do a conceptual approval or disapproval. And then after we get the other two budget notes have not currently been okayed by the co-chairs as well. So we'll walk through the budget, have the LFO walk us through that, and then have conceptual approval. And then by that time, we ought to have work done on the budget notes, and we'll bring it back. All right. Madam Chair, members of the committee, what I'd like to do is follow the same process we have followed with other budgets, which is to ask the agency to do a walkthrough of the current service level and any budget packages, and then we will, then I'll come back with the recommendations from LFO.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Debbie Lincoln, the Deputy Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And you should have in front of you a handout. Again, these are right out of the budget pages. Yes. I put a little bit more on in the handout since you were interested in some of the information from the budget pages. But again, if you want to get into the budget book, just use those page numbers at the bottom. The Oregon OSHA budget is a base plus one package budget, and Pete DeLuca is here with me to explain any program issues plus the package for you. We've got a $35 million base budget with 249 FTE. We reduced the budget by $64,000 for vacancy and increased it for inflation to get the $35.7 million base plus essential package budget. The decision package, the option package, requests 4 FTE for $337,000 and gives us a total $36 million budget. And I'll ask Pete to talk about the policy packages.
Madam Chair, committee, my spirited work, I'm the administrator of Oregon OSHA. The budget request or the option request that we're asking for includes four positions. One is an enforcement analyst. This is a health compliance officer person who is an industrial hygienist who would work in our Salem central office and analyze health issues, analyze federal issues that relate to health enforcement, analyze health statistics and things of that nature, and generally help us in order to take our program for health compliance out into the field. The second position is a consultation supervisor. We, in the past biennium, had one consultation supervisor for both Salem and for Portland, and that position ran up and down I-5, and in addition had responsibility for the consultants in the Bend office. We found that was just too great a load for one person to carry, and are asking to fill that position with a permanent supervisor who would supervise 15 people in the Portland field office. The last two positions are both support positions, one for Bend, one for Medford. There are 19 employees in the Bend office and 16 employees in the Medford office. Each of those offices are currently serviced by a full-time permanent one support position, and in order to provide adequate support, we'd like to increase that to two. All four of these positions are currently being filled as a limited duration, and we were asking permission then to fill them on a permanent basis.
I would be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Senator Hartson?
Thank you. Good morning. Peter, tell me about the staff increases. You know, I continue to look for ways to make government more productive and also, you know, reduce the cost if possible. Are you taking full advantage of the so-called information age where your consultation supervisors can work with the people, not have to be physically present in Medford or wherever?
Senator Hartling, yes, we are. In fact, our consultation supervisor in Eugene supervises the Eugene office and the Bend office in addition to the Medford office, and much of that is done by computer. We take advantage of computers in many, many ways in Oregon OSHA. We have a variety of programs up on the web. Many of our standards are on the Internet. We do some teaching of classes on the Internet, and we do an awful lot of business internally with one another through the Internet. Some of these things just require people present in order to be able to do them. Our position history in, for example, 1989 to 91, we had 243 FTE, or 243 positions in Oregon OSHA. And as of right now, we have 249. So we have grown really very little over the years. We're simply asking for these positions because we have experienced a great need for them.
Thank you. Other questions? Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Steve, can you tell me on your revenue source what percentage of it is from the Department of Labor for OSHA and what percentage of it is workers' compensation premium assessment?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, we have about a 35% breakdown of our funding, which comes from the U.S. Department of Labor. It comes back into the budget. Basically, it's recaptured. And the remainder all comes from the workers' comp premium assessment.
What percentage of the assessment, how much was the assessment increase for this time?
Madam Chair, members, Representative Winters, the assessment went up from 4.5% to 7.3%. I don't have that broken down by the contribution to OSHA, but we can get those breakdowns.
Thank you.
Senator Gordon?
Thank you, and good morning. Are any of the four limited duration positions previously approved that were moving to permanent positions, are any of those tied to or related to the farm labor camp inspections?
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, well, the consultation people, the consultation supervisor would, while none of them are directly related, the consultation supervisor would be involved in farm labor issues to the extent that the Portland field office gets requests from growers who have farm labor camps to send consultants out and help with upgrading camps. And the enforcement analyst position, health analyst, much of the enforcement that we do with respect to farm labor, particularly in the area of field sanitation, comes from our health side, and so that position would be involved in farm labor issues as well. And neither of them are directly dedicated to or related to those issues, but both of those two positions would have some contact with those issues as they did their daily duties. And the two clerical positions as well would have some contact with that because we get calls in both Medford and Bend. Probably not nearly as many calls there as we do over here in the Valley, but we do have those issues over there occasionally as well.
Well, it's accurate to say then that at least two of the positions support our efforts to inspect or enforce farm labor camps.
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, yes, that is accurate.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, we're finished. We're
going. Sorry. Sure. Madam Chair, members of the committee, starting on page one of my handout, recommending approval of the current service level. I'm recommending approval of passage 151, which is the OROSHA staff increases at $337,100. $116 in full FTE. has noted those positions are currently working. They are currently limited duration. This action makes them permanent. I am recommending that we reduce the governor's budget by $68,738 to reflect the 18-month actual expenditure patterns. Reduce the governor's budget by $21,051 for the attorney general rate reduction. Reduce the governor's budget by $160,866 to reflect actual vacancy rate projections. Approve a $750 technical adjustment. And we will come back to the budget note issues when some issues have been resolved and the co-chair approves them. And with those recommendations, then, I'm approving that we recommend that we adopt a program budget of $35,851,479 other funds and 253 FTEs.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Is there an issue regarding the budget notes 1 and 2 as far as the co-chairs are concerned?
To the best of my knowledge, no, but I just have not gotten approval back from them.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's
Representative Broad?
Thank you, Madam Chair. What happens to these savings? Since this is not general fund money, the 160 savings that is projected, vacancy rates, what happens to that money?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that action simply reduces their limits, which reduces their the amount that they have available to, it reduces their ability to expend the funds. It doesn't do anything to whatever they may have in the ending balance or to whatever they may have available. It simply reduces their expenditure ability. And should that be inadequate, they can always come back to the emergency board to request an increase in their other funds limitation.
And just to follow up, and so if they happen to have every single one of their positions filled, which actually we want them to do because we want them to be doing these inspections, then they would run short of money and have to go back to the e-board?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that's technically possible. This is a very big agency. They have one expenditure limitation for other funds for the entire agency, so the presumption is that they can work within that limitation, but that is a possibility.
Okay. Well, what I was getting to is, are we ultimately trying to reduce the impact on the workers' comp fund? Is that what we're trying to do here?
My intent, Madam Chair, members of the committee, is to have their budget as closely reflect their actual expenditure patterns as possible.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, the question I have here is that we want them to be out there doing these inspections, and we have raised concerns about the capacity to do that, and so I wouldn't want us to do anything with the budget that would negatively impact their capacity to keep their positions filled and keep their inspections rolling.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the fact of the matter is that there are a number of areas within this budget where there are highly technical positions where they have difficulty recruiting, and this simply reflects the actual timeline that it's taking for them to fill those positions. It should not adversely affect their ability to operate with the existing resources that they have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so I understand the numbers, we have the governor's recommended budget here, mm-hmm. and your outline. And on the second page, when you say approve a budget program of $35,851,479,
mm-hmm.
if you back out your recommendations, that would net, or if we added on the net, we would come back to $36,101. Is that the $384? Is that? Is that how it adds up, I guess?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I mean, Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to have to write myself.
It is Monday, and it's...
It is early. I was doing so well. Representative Edwards, if you would take a look at the attachment to my handout, I do that crosswalk for you.
Oh,
so if you see the governor's recommended 36101, then you, which includes the budget package. And then if you follow down, you can see the adjustments that I just described in my narrative.
Well, thank you very much. I hadn't gotten that page.
Representative Wilson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to know if I'm doing my math right or jumping to a conclusion I shouldn't here. That 4 FTE is costing $337,116, and I presume that includes salary and benefits. But if I divide that by 4, I get $84,200 per employee, per FTE. Is there something here that I'm not figuring in?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, that's a two-year cost.
Two-year cost.
So it's an average of $40,000 a year with two professionals and two clerical.
Okay, thanks.
I'm sure. My question is to hook on to that. You're saying that these are limited duration positions being changed to permanent. Wouldn't they already be funded in the budget then?
Madam Chair, Senator Tro, when we do limited duration positions, we do them with the vacancy savings, any kind of funds we can find in the budget. Those have been backed out.
This is the first time funding for positions, even
that's
though
right.
They're a continuation.
That's right, Senator Tro.
Any other questions? Okay. Representative Ross.
Okay. If in the course of this biennium you find that in order to maintain an adequate level of inspection and enforcement in farm labor camps, you needed more staff, what would you do?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, I think first of all we'd look internally to see what we can do across the department to improve that. It would be, I think, preferable though to come to the E Board and raise that policy issue with the emergency board.
And
position authority.
And so if you felt that you needed temporarily for 6 months or so to beef up your staff, do you have the capacity to do that internally with savings from other sources?
Madam Chair, Representative Ross, I think we do, yes.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, that's just my concern is that, you know, they seem to be looking at this. It's an issue that's been raised. We want those facilities to be safe, and we want to support the initiative that the department's already taken in that way. And I just wanted to be sure that we were allowing them the flexibility to temporarily add more staff. We have this apprenticeship program going, and I think that we want the operators of those camps to understand that they do have to meet the health and safety standards. And if I'm understanding correctly, the department has the capacity and the reductions that the LFO is recommending would not make that impossible.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, one thing we could do again is to express those concerns in the budget report and the expectation that should these reductions adversely impact their ability to do this, that they should come back to the emergency plan.
Right. And really, our understanding with them that this has been an issue that's been raised, and they've said on the record that they have the capacity to respond if their staff is temporarily unable to meet the demand.
Right. Senator Nelson?
This budget reflects the programs you have that encourage employers to come in and have a sort of a self-audit or check. And do you feel that should be the greater emphasis rather than the enforcement, or how does that reflect in the budget?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, that program you're referring to is consultation. We have roughly 40 consultants in this budget, which is the level that we have had over the past 2 years. Currently, the usage of that program indicates that we've got right about the right number of people doing it, and we will certainly continue that. It's one of our premier programs of which we're very proud.
Representative Winters?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just from my understanding and clarification, how many of the positions are in the field and how many of them are actually in a consultative kind of a role?
Madam Chair, Representative Winters, well, actually most of the consultants are in the field. So I'm trying to, we don't have it broken down that way in terms of how many are actually in the field. We have 86 compliance officers and 40 consultants, all of whom are in the field. And in addition to that, we have supervisory staff and we have support staff and whatnot. We also have in the field another 16 people in our training unit who go out and perform training outside of the agency. And then we have about 16 in technical who spend most of their time giving technical advice over the telephone. So those people, the technical people, aren't really in the field, but they deal with the public on a regular basis. The training people are in the field. The compliance people are in the field, and the consultants are all in the field as well.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Okay. What we're going to do with that, this particular budget, as I explained earlier, is going to a conceptual approval until we get approval of the budget notes. So can I get a motion?
Move approval of the ORSHA budget as submitted by LSO.
Conceptual
approval. $35,851,470.
Any questions?
I'm sure I
Senator Miller
wants to note that I cannot support the increased number of FTEs. In fact, I would suggest that this is among the budgets that we ought to be looking for reductions in the current number of FTEs. I'm almost embarrassed to see it grow.
Okay. One objection? Any other?
Okay.
Representative Backlund? Motion carries. We'll bring the budget back and have to revisit and look at it. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the next division is the Insurance Division, and Nancy Ellison, the Administrator, will join me at the table. This is a fairly stable budget. This is on the second page of your handout, $13.7 million base budget. $14 million with inflation and essential package adjustments, 97.5 FTE. The governor's budget recognizes the central hearings panel, House Bill 2525, and takes $75,301 in 3 FTE out of this budget and transfers it to the Employment Department for the central hearings panel. Leaves us with a $14.1 million budget and 94.5 FTE. There are no additional policy packages in this budget. Nancy will be available to answer program questions. That's all we have, Madam Chair.
Any questions regarding the insurance division?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again, as it says, standard current service level, which I'm recommending that the committee approve. I'm recommending a reduction of $224,589 in other funds to reflect actual expenditure, 18-month expenditure patterns adjusted for planned expenditures. Recommending that we reduce the governor's budget by $8,739 for attorney general rate reductions and reduce the budget $25,768 to reflect agency vacancy rate projections, and that we delete package 141, the central hearings unit, that's $75,301, and add back the 3 FTE. If the substantive bill passes, these costs and FTE would be incorporated into that bill.
Senator Harkin?
On sub D, I like, any reduction we can find. And when you say 18-month actual expenditure, that's because, of course, you can't run it through June 30th. Of this year, but that's amortized over 2 years. Is that correct? And is there any incentives? Do we have any incentives to encourage these agencies to, keep their expenditures down the best way we can? To me, it seems like there's a disincentive for them to do that because if they don't spend it, why to reduce their upcoming budget?
Debbie, do you want to comment?
Madam Chair, Senator Hartung, there's no program or specific incentive. We're very much aware that we will be coming back to you every 2 years, and that's the main feature of it. What we've done is we worked with your staff to identify reductions, just go through almost an item-by-item basis and look at the different line items. For example, when Robin pulled together these figures, we looked at what payments for rent, for example, have not yet been made to be sure that we still have that money in it. But we have also continued to identify vacancy savings, as Robin has discussed. And a lot of these are vacancy savings. We put a factor in the governor's budget, and then another one when Robin did her analysis. So we look at that very carefully and are very, very conscious of needing to keep these budgets very tight. Another piece with the insurance division, too, is that the insurance companies who pay the freight for this division look very closely at our expenditures. And at one point came in and did a major audit. So the companies, the people that whom we assess in order to have revenues, followed us very closely. And you would certainly hear from them if we weren't as tight as we would be.
Thank you. Well, to ask the agency, what's the effect of deleting package of 41, the central hearings unit? Money is reduced, but FTE is added back. How does that work?
Madam Chair, Senator Trell, when the package was put together, the three FTE plus their costs were transferred to the Employment Department, plus an additional $75,000 for overhead costs for the central hearings panel. So when that's eliminated, we get the FTE back to do the job that they're currently doing, which is conducting hearings, plus their cost in our budget. But the $75,000, which was out there for overhead costs for a central hearings panel, goes away until they decide that there will be a central hearings panel.
So there will be none. You don't need those expenditures that you get.
That's right. And it's
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was looking at my notes when you presented your budget, and could you once again explain the increase in FTE from the legislative adopted budget to the base budget? You went from 95 to 97. And I had something here about Senate Bill 21 and positions. What was that again?
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, yes, we got some positions from the E-Board implement Senate Bill 21. We've got a market conduct examiner, a program person, some support people, and we phased them in over the course of 18 months. Pardon me, that was to implement the new patient rights bill. Senate Bill 21 is a patient rights bill.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Senator Miller?
Do you have a little detail on the package 030, the state government service charge? I see there's an increase of $2,336. What all is included in the cost of goods and services, as well as the state government service charge?
Madam Chair, Senator Miller, can I ask Scott to come up and give us that detail? Scott Pera is our budget officer and has that.
Okay, just 1 minute.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Scott Hare. I'm the budget officer for the Department of Consumer and Business Services. Madam Chair, Senator Miller, the package 030 contains the standard 2.8% inflation rate on services and supply items in the budget, and then the state government service charge increase is based on the price list that the Department of Administrative Services provides to us at the beginning of the budget process. We allocate those charges through each of the programs in the agency, and for some programs we'll see a slight increase, and for other programs we'll see a decrease. Usually we allocate those costs based on FTE within the department, and so if programs are growing or shrinking from one biennium to the next, you'd see slight adjustments in there. I can't get more specific on the individual charges within the state government service charges that might have gone up or down. DAS might be able to provide that information for you a little bit more clearly. Items in there that are included in there include the central government services charge. That part of that goes to the legislature to fund their programs. There's a portion that goes to fund the different divisions of the Department of Administrative Services. There are charges that go for the state library and on and on. you can provide a detailed listing of all the state government service charges for the committee if you'd like.
I would appreciate that.
I think that'd be good handout for the committee.
Is there a charge, Madam Chair, to the for an audit?
Madam Chair, Senator Miller, yes, there is.
Performed by?
The Secretary of State.
Seems to me, Madam Chair, we had legislation 2 years ago to get rid of that kind of slush fund that everybody was being hit up, whether they were audited or not. And it seems to me we maybe the governor vetoed it, wouldn't be surprised, but we suggested that if you were actually endured the audit, that yeah, you ought to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
But the division was surviving and basically going out and dinging everybody whether or not they were going to be audited or not. And I guess I need to review whether or not that change was successful. If it's incorporated here, how frequently is the audit performed? Annual?
Madam Chair, Senator Miller, we get regular visits from the Secretary of State's Audit Division. It's basically, for the most part, on an annual basis that we get audited. We're a fairly large player in the statewide financial statement, and so they spend a fair amount of time with this agency reviewing the activities throughout the biennium that we conduct.
I expect you would, and I appreciate that. Still raise a concern regarding other agencies who may never have the wonderful privilege to still pay for it.
Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, thank you. Robin, question for you. Do I understand that we're using about 2.8% per year for roll up cost inflation?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, no, that's a biennial figure.
It's a biennial figure. So I guess the question I have, and I would ask you, Robin, just for a quick read on this, when we're looking at a 2.8% growth, but yet all the budgets that we're looking at, and it's been fairly consistent since we've turned back to looking at budgets, all of them are coming in at around 9% growth, but yet the inflation and so forth has really been just totaling 2.8 for the biennium. Let's cut to the chase. What are we looking at? Just program growth with more people, more programs, over and above the inflation cost?
Representative Wilson, actually, you're looking at about four things. You're looking at salary adjustments. You're looking at phase-in of programs that the legislature would have adopted during the biennium, and there were significant phase-ins in programs this biennium, so that's why sort of on a average across the board, you're seeing a fairly significant increase in the current service level. You're also looking at phase-ups, and then you're looking at inflationary adjustments. So each of those things all interplay within the agencies and affect the total increase in cost.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just so I understand, so I'm clear with staff how your recommendation on the budget note 141 works. Again, going back to the initial overlay, what we've heard, at least I understood that once, assuming 25-25 becomes law, which I assume that's going to happen, but if that assumption is correct, then the full cost of those three employees, the cost of them will ultimately be transferred to the employment division. Is that right? Right now, we're just suspending that decision and only allowing $78,000 or $75,000 to be cut out, but the cost of the employees ultimately be borne where if 25-25 becomes law.
My understanding, Representative Edwards, is that this would be a contractual relationship between the agency and the employment department, so that this would be paid out of their budget out of professional services.
Well, again, just looking at what was described in their presentation of the governor's recommendation, staffing impact, these three positions will be transferred to the employment department. These positions are an enlisted hearings officer and office specialist. And then when you look on page 129B of their of this handout, we saw a net reduction of about $405,000. So you're saying that money is not going to be netted out. It will be net to 75, but
the agency's making faces at me, so I don't
think. So I guess I'm trying to understand what's happening with the money in the positions. I don't recall. I thought there was actually a physical sense movement.
Madam
Chair, Representative Edwards, currently those three positions, the two hearings officers and the one support position, if you were to look in the base budget of the insurance division, that's where they're located. What the package proposes to do is to transfer those positions to the employment department and the cost, the services and supplies costs associated with those positions. In return, they're adding to our professional services line an increase that would cover the cost of those positions so that when they perform those same services for us, we can pay them. And then they added an additional $75,000 to cover their overhead costs that we currently cover in another way. So that's what the $75,000 increase is to cover employment department overhead. What we're doing is we're unwinding that deal, so we don't need that $75,000 anymore to be added to our expenditure limitation, and it adds back the three FTE that we proposed to transfer to employment department in House Bill 2525.
Well, I guess what's confusing to me is they have three people under another roof, although you count them in your roof, under your roof. I don't quite understand that.
Representative Edwards, if that bill passes, the FTE would remain, would go to the hearings unit.
Of employment.
Of employment.
So they would see net three out of their...
Right.
So next session when we're sitting here,
right,
you would see three left.
Right, and that is how that budget package was structured. If you look at my crosswalk, there was a minus three FTE, which I'm recommending adding back because that package isn't going to happen.
That isn't going to happen, but the central hearings unit is going to happen, possibly.
That package, Senator Trill, that package is not going to happen through this budget. Maybe that's a clearer way of putting it. If, in fact, the bill passes, then these activities would happen in that bill.
So we have to readjust that, and that $75,000 will be in that bill rather than in this thing. And who pays it? They do?
They'll
pay it.
Senator Trill, yes.
Is it reflected in their budget for now?
If that bill, Senator Trill, if that bill passes, it will be reflected in their budget. We will do a budget report on the bill, and it will do all of these adjustments for all of the agencies that are affected by the bill, instead of doing it individually in each of the individual budgets.
Well, I think I understood that last comment. I apologize. It's Monday morning. It is almost 9 o'clock now. So we don't know we don't have a crystal ball. 2525 may or may not become law, but when it does, let's just say I can see that, then you'll see a reconciliation bill of some sort that will reduce your FTE by three. And hence, while we right now are encouraging, we're not making any statement about 2525, really. We don't know other than some overhead. Okay. Well, I would also encourage that it become law, because as a sitting member of the Judiciary Committee, it's a very good goal, and I think it will help the state reduce some costs, but it's kind of hard to see that reflected here. I guess that's where my concern was.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I would explain my recommendation as being in the nature of a clarifying adjustment, because the intent is to handle everything through the bill, so that it's clear that all of those adjustments take place in all of the agency budgets. And that's why the recommendation in this agency is to take those packages out so that there's not any confusion if and when 2525 passes.
I just, the thing that's confusing me is you're talking about overhead, which may or may not happen. So why don't you even take it out now? I mean, until you see it happen, why don't you take it all out at once?
Representative Edwards, let me try one more time. There was a budget package put in agency budgets, a variety of different agency budgets, in anticipation of passage of the hearings unit. There were preliminary calculations as to what those would cost.
the decision was made that rather than try to deal with all of those issues in each individual budget, we would back out all of the packages related to that in all of the agency budgets, and then when the bill comes forward, deal with the actual known cost at that time. So it's possible that that overhead cost may change. It's possible that the number of FTE may change. I'm just, you know, speculating. So instead of doing it piecemeal in individual budgets, all of those issues will be addressed at once in the budget, bill for the substantive legislation.
I'm sure.
Representative Wilson, did you have a question?
Well, I was just going to go back and ask Robin again. It would really be helpful when looking at these budgets to be able to go directly to some breakouts that tell us about the percentage of increases on those four things that you mentioned. Now, do we have those listed in here?
Representative Wilson, if you take a look at what the agency handed out, and I believe the budget number is page 21 of the of their budget book, but it's in their handout. The material that are stapled together, that's mine.
This is yours.
It's
this
the one that looks like this.
Okay. Yeah. Right.
And you turn inside.
Okay.
To the insurance division, page 21.
Okay.
There is a detailed current service level crosswalk that shows all of the adjustments that were made.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Just a point of information, Peggy, which other agencies are captured in House Bill 2525?
Oh, man, Chair Senator Gordley, I don't know off the top of my head. But it's quite a few. I know I have another agency that's included, and that's the Construction Contractors Board. But I think there are, you know, I think DMV is included.
And the bill is where in the top there?
I believe it's in Ways and Means.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Madam Chair, just to for Representative Edwards' benefit, I know that the concept of the bill is very good, and it's been in the Judiciary Committee. As we've reviewed the budget, though, just actually making the transfer and having other people do the administrative hearings and so forth poses a lot of problems for various agencies. So I think as we deal with these budgets, we're hearing, well, they don't know how it's going to work. They're not quite sure that it's going to work as well as what they now have. So that may be posing one of the problems with the thing.
Thank you. And just to comment on that, Madam Chair, is the bill as written was a pilot for 4 years, so I think a lot of those concerns and issues would be raised and hopefully worked out. But I know there's been a lot of work done over the interim on that bill.
Senator Hartson?
Robin, one more time on page 21 of the recommended budget. Estimated cost of $97.99, merit increase $137,000. Where does that show up in the 99.01 base budget?
If I understand your question, Senator Hartung, if you follow this sheet down, you start with the legislatively approved budget, the $700,000, I believe, are the salary adjustments, and then you have the position actions and the merit increase, and that leads you to your base budget of
Thirteen.
Okay, and that's your base.
Okay,
and then the other adjustments down below are added in to get to your current service level.
So what you're saying is the merit increase is added in the essential package part of the
before that page.
It's Senator Hartung, it's added in before you get to the essential package.
Okay, got it.
Any other questions?
Chair.
Yes.
I'd like to move the LFO recommendation.
Senator Carroll moves the LFO recommendation. Do we have any discussion? Any questions? Any objections?
Yeah, I'm going to object. I'm not objecting to this specific division whatsoever, and I don't want it to be construed that way, but I'm getting tired of 9% increase, 10% increase.
Representative Olson, And Representative Jackson, motion carried. Madam Chair, members of the committee, the next division is the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities, and Richard Knuckleby is joining me at the table today, the administrator. This is on in your handout, about the third page down, labeled page 138. The base budget is a almost $7.5 million budget, 63.88 FTE. With the essential packages, it rolls up to 7,494,127. We do have four policy packages in this budget, and Dick can walk through those with you and give you some more details on them for an $8.2 million and 60.64 FTE request. Dick?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Richard Knuckleby, Administrator, Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. Our first option package is a request to $116,701 for supervising examiner to replace the current limited duration principal exec manager C, a permanent range 29 position. The limited duration position was created in October of 97 based on volume and a number of issues in that program. It was designed to better supervise the combined examination staff for banks and credit unions. It supervises the direct training, scheduling, examination quality, and reports. In addition, it's responsible for Y2K examinations and coordination with the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and other federal regulators. It has facilitated our pool examiner concept and provides more uniform quality between the banks and credit union exams and provides added depth in that area.
I'm sure.
Senator Schrum?
What monies pay for this? So what sort of, I know it's other funds, what kind of other funds pay for this position?
All of our packages and our programs are funded by the industries that we regulate. In this case, it would be banks and credit unions that would be paying for it.
Do the banks and credit unions object to your having this position?
No, they don't. In fact, they support it. I think we have a credit union representative here, and the bankers are also in support of it.
Thank you.
Option package 162 is a request for $318,301 and an increase of three positions, which is making two limited duration positions permanent, range 25 finance examiners, one for mortgage bankers and brokers, one in consumer finance. There adds one range 15 office specialist two, which is also currently limited duration. And these limited duration positions were required due to volume, and we can go into those numbers if you like, but there was substantial growth in both of those programs. With these positions...
Just wanted to ask, again, industry supports having these positions,
yes,
and agrees with you that you need them.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, thank you.
You want me to go faster?
Sure, I'm going fine. Yes.
Without those positions, we would not be able to fulfill our statutory requirements on examining the consumer finance companies and the mortgage brokers. We're already neck and neck on trying to keep up with those limited duration positions. The growth has been very rapid. Option package 163 would add two positions, requesting $178,993. One of those would be a securities examiner range 26 and one office specialist 2 range 15. And this is required by growth in the securities licensing and examination area and the need to regulate the sale of viatical settlement contracts. And we have a bill which is working its way through on that. as well as the need for examination of investment advisors, which resulted from a recent change in federal law. And prior to the law change, a major portion of investment advisor oversight was from the federal government, and we are now picking up a large number of those on the smaller investment advisors. And we currently regulate 200 investment advisors plus 483 investment advisor representatives. Option package 164 requests $120,571, an increase of one position. This is the financial examiner. Range 22 will be used to administer the Pawnbroker Act. And the Pawnbroker Act, we had a bill in which does not appear that it's going to get to a hearing. We still need the position, however, to enforce the current law. We don't have the resources to investigate what appears to be a number of unlicensed consignment shops and buy and sell shops. And without this position, we would not be able to effectively make sure the law is being administered. We estimate there may be between 200 and 300 unlicensed locations, but we really don't know because we don't have the staff to examine for it.
Representative Fenner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question. The bill, you said, doesn't look like it's going to pull through. Does that change the amount of the revenue that you were hoping to generate with that particular piece of legislation?
Madam Chair, the winners, it changes the way we will do it. What we're now proposing to do would be a increase of fees to the existing pawnbrokers. The amount we're not sure of yet, so we will borrow from agency funds until we know how many other firms we will be able to license under this act. And when we get a good handle on what the total number is, we'll be able to arrive at whatever that number is. We were originally talking about increasing the fee to $3,000 a year, and that's what it would take to fund the position. We're not going to do that right away. We're going to increase the fee as needed, but borrow from the funds so we have a much better picture of how many are actually going to be under the program.
Are the pawnbrokers, are you discussing with them about the increase in fee and that it's subject to the market?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Winters, yes, we've had extensive discussions with both groups, with the traditional pawnbroker group and with the buy and sell and consignment shops. We thought we were close to a compromise on an amendment to the bill that everyone would have been happy with, but we didn't quite get there. So the existing group is well aware that there will be an increase in fees. Several of them have told us they are willing to pay that because they want a level playing field and they want the other shops to be supervised by us also.
And just really, I just want to make a comment. The committee's information, I received a phone call from law enforcement who suggested that this would be a very helpful position for them as well, trying to keep track of what's legal and what's not legal. So this is, in their opinion, a desperately needed expenditure by the state. Senator Gordon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate that information because that's my concern. I understood that the bill was very much supported by law enforcement. Is the lack of consensus on the amendment the problem in terms of getting a hearing on the bill? What is the problem?
Well, the lack of consensus came down to, I think, one major difference between the two groups. The traditional pawnbrokers wanted a 60-day holding period for goods which were pawned, and the buy and sell shops, their business practices, they turn their merchandise frequently, and they could not live with anything longer than 30 days. We had worked out a compromise which would have basically allowed them both to operate in the way they were doing, but it still did not meet the needs of the traditional group, and they could not support it. So the bill will not come before the committee on the Senate side.
For that reason.
Yes, but back to the front of the chair, yes, the law enforcement is very much in favor of this position and our being able to go out. One of the things we do is we get a list of all merchandise that they have taken in, and if we don't supervise these firms to make sure they're doing that, then the police aren't sure that that list is accurate and they can't check it. And that's one of the main things they like to do is to check merchandise which has come in.
Madam Chair, I hope there's some way that we can, those of us who see the importance of the legislation, can find a way to insert ourselves in the process to make this happen. And right now, I don't know what that solution is, but I'm one of those folks who'd be willing to do that.
Senator Hudson?
Yes, Richard, I'm looking at package 163, life settlement securities, the heading there. Does that include all regular stockbrokers, investment brokers? Or
No, what that is, a viatical settlement contract, is, in our view, when it becomes a security, is when one of these life settlement contracts is sold to others through a broker. The initial part is regulated by the insurance division, and that is the contract itself and the assignment of a life insurance policy, usually someone with a fatal illness.
Okay.
And then once it goes to a broker and they sell those policies to investors, we believe they should be regulated as a security because there are many issues and they aren't being adequately disclosed and there have been some losses as a result of that.
Concern follow? Is there a state agency that has oversight on, you know, regular securities, stockbrokers?
Oh, yes, Madam Chair, Senator Hargrove, that is our division. The security section in our division supervises licensing, registration, and enforcement of securities issues.
Where does that show up in the package here, or does it?
Well,
that supervision that you just told me.
Okay, this package that you just referred to would be administered in the securities section of our division. And that's where the additional securities examiner would be housed.
Madam Chair, Senator Harkin, it's part of the base budget, the securities piece.
I see. Okay.
It's part of the division's entire budget.
A follow-up, Madam Chair. I saw an interesting presentation on how the stock brokerage business is growing on the Internet. And, I mean, it's incredible what the amount of activity is going on. So what sort of oversight or how do you keep track of that?
Madam Chair, Senator Hartung, you're right. It is growing very rapidly, and it's probably beyond any given state's ability to monitor it. But the SEC has assigned a large staff to monitoring Internet fraud. They refer anything in the state of Oregon to us, and we follow up. We've not had a large number of incidents or complaints yet, but we anticipate that will happen because it is happening nationwide.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Robin on page 25 of Finance and Development Securities, the sheet here that you've prepared for us, or they've prepared for us. I wanted to ask you about under the heading of, it's base personal service adjustments.
Mm-hmm.
Administrative biennialized e-board and phase-outs, totaling $272,000. Could you give me an idea of what that line means exactly?
Well, it's a variety of different adjustments, and it might be better to just bring you in the detail if that's what you're looking for, because there are a combination of factors that go on in that. But it's mostly the roll-up cost for existing positions.
Okay. Rather than getting into that kind of detail, I wanted to ask you what could be something included under the heading biennialized e-board?
Madam Chair, Representative Wilson, if you'll turn back to the insurance division on page 21, there's an example there. The insurance division request over the, we've got three positions being added. Up at the top, the emergency and the e-board actions, we put in 2.25 FTE. Do you see that? Because we are phasing in order to biennialize those to four full positions, we have to add the 1.75 FTE in this budget. So that's an example of how you show a phase-in of e-board positions.
All right, that's good enough. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. And then the COLA, the cost of living, and the e-board cost would be in that next fund line.
Okay. All right. Are you finished? All right.
Robin, you want to walk us through your recommendation?
Okay. Again, my recommendation is to approve the current service level and to approve the budget packages, package 161, which is the bank's credit union examiner of 116,701, the payday package 162 payday loans 318,301, and 3 FTE. The settlement securities package 163 of 178,993,000 and 1.84 FTE, and package 164 pawn brokers 120,571 and 0.92 FTE. I'm also recommending that we reduce the governor's budget by 57,301 to reflect 18-month actual expenditure patterns. Reduce the governor's budget by 5,306 for attorney general rate reductions. Reduce the governor's budget by 38,652 to reflect agency vacancy rate projections. And with those adjustments, I'm recommending a program budget of $8,127,427 other funds and 60.64 FTE.
Just one question on the 162, are those currently employed, or those new?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, two of them are currently limited duration positions, and there is one new position.
What would happen if we only approved to the two current instead of adding one more?
I'd let the agency speak to that.
In fact, it's 162.
Madam Chair, I might ask our budget analyst here, but I think that we have all three of those positions filled. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
So we have limited duration positions in the clerical staff position also, and that was necessary to fill the workload.
Okay. Representative Bedford?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I know this is sort of last minute, but I want to pick up on something that Senator Hartung talked about, which is the use of the internet for trading. I think when you first came before us, I talked about that as being a growing phenomenon. And I think I personally have a little bit of concern about people trading. I think trading on the internet can be fine, but it's sort of a whole new way in which folks can basically access the market. And I don't know if this is an appropriate time to ask for some, if we can entertain some budget notes, I would ask that you come back to us next session to lay out some of the risks. While you said you haven't had any complaints as far as misinformation on the net, I think this is an area that, in the long term, I think could have some potential impact on how Oregonians' financial wherewithal is affected. And I think part of it is we all get on the net, and there's lots of advertising and things. And I'm not saying I'm looking for ghosts, but I think there's two issues. One is whether or not people are is there abuse on the internet by the financial markets, or are things being put out there? But secondly, sort of a public awareness about the risk. You hear a lot, which is a different issue, about day traders. People just get on the net. It's almost like gambling. They don't necessarily have even the resources to trade. I mean, it becomes, if you think video poker is addicting, you should see what some of these folks are doing on the net. I'm not suggesting this is a widespread problem, but I think there's an issue out there it's in the public eye, so I don't know if this is the appropriate place to have a discussion about that or if there's an interest by the committee, but I think it's a consumer issue, I think, eventually, that we will be facing over time.
Madam Chair, Representative Edwards, I agree with everything you said. We do have a full-time position, investor education, that goes out to the community, to groups, and is available for speaking. He goes to any place he can get an audience and basically says a lot of what you have just said. He explains basic investment practices and what's prudent and what's not. He doesn't specifically get into day trading because that is almost like playing the lottery, as you say, but he advises people to use prudent investment actions, and he speaks to many retirement groups, service clubs, et cetera. So I agree with you. We're trying to do some education in that area, but we would be very happy to do whatever additional explanation to the committee in the interim or the next session that the chair would request.
I guess what I was looking for was, and I appreciate, maybe it's when we come back next session, you would report on that aspect of your operations with the budget. I guess and again, I'm not suggesting you're not doing a good job. It's just grown exponentially, and it will probably in the next few years be even more commonplace. And I guess I'm just trying to get a handle on maybe you could report back to us sort of what do you see for the state? I mean, is it an issue that even the legislature needs to address? I know a lot of this is federal law, but are there things in addition to just public service by a person speaking that would help? And again, maybe this isn't the appropriate place if there's not an interest, but I think the issue is a big one, or a growing is going to become a bigger one. So, whatever the wishes of the chair.
Representative Wilson?
Thank you. Another question. Since this division is funded strictly by the other funds, thank you. annual assessments, licensing, registration, examination fees. Is there a fee bill that goes along with this to increase the fees on everybody, or how are we going to generate the other funds to meet this 8.5% increase? Oh,
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, and members of the committee,
with us, John.
I'm picking up on the agenda of the member I'm looking at. I apologize. I'm going to just quit mentioning you. because the agency has experienced growth in this area, that would generate additional revenue. So there is no need to increase the fees to fund these activities.
So it's just going to be regulating more people then, and so as a result, there's more revenue.
Representative Wilson, that's correct.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
Sure. On the issue of the internet investments and so forth, do you think a budget note would be sufficient? Have you any idea what we might say in a budget note that would be helpful? And if not,
I'm trying to think what you would put in there. Certainly, I wouldn't object to a budget note. There are ongoing studies of this at the national level by the SEC, and we can certainly report back or try to include their findings to the committee.
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion on
this? Just one moment.
Madam Chair, and I apologize. I don't have language, and I really – sorry, this is sort of last minute, but I think something along those lines in which you would report back to the next legislature, because there is going to be a lot of information – generate outside the state, but also some things that you personally might see in your division that would help give us some comfort in what is happening in this area, because as we all know, again, the internet's just booming, not only in this area, but consumers, et cetera. And just are there some issues of risk that we should be aware of that might help facilitate your efforts to boost on the public awareness side? I don't have any language.
Yeah, Representative Edwards, members of the committee, I think we could add a request in the language of the budget report, unless you've got specific direction you want to give them, requesting them to report back prior to the next legislative session on their activities involving the internet. If you want to give them some specific direction, then maybe I could work with you on language.
Okay. Yes.
And we could bring that back and then bring the other sections
back. Madam Chair, with that in mind, I'd like to move the LFO recommendation.
Senator Cottrell moves the LFO recommendation. Any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Gardner.
Thank you. I need to declare a potential conflict of interest as a member of the board.
Senator Gardner's conflict of interest is noted. Any other discussion? Any objections? Motion carries. Well, I appreciate the committee showing up on time this morning. And with that, we are adjourned.
maximum.